Welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're stepping into a world where the pursuit of knowledge meets, well, some very human dilemmas. We're talking about academic publishing.
It's a world many people imagine as purely objective, you know, black and white. But the reality is that researchers are under a lot of pressure, just like anyone else, and sometimes that pressure can lead them into some ethically gray areas.
Which is what makes this deep dive so interesting. We're looking at an article by Xiaoping Shen called Author Ethical Dilemmas in the Research Publication Process, and he illustrates these dilemmas using real-life examples from journal editors.
Yeah, and these aren't just like hypothetical situations. These are actual things that have happened, and probably more often than people realize.
So let's just jump right into it. The first scenario Chen calls data dilemmas. So imagine a group of researchers. They're studying team effectiveness. They've done this big study, collected a ton of data, and then they get the idea to be a little clever about how they present their findings.
This is what Chen refers to as salami slicing, where instead of publishing the findings as one big comprehensive study, they split the data up into multiple smaller papers. So on the surface, it seems like a great strategy to maximize publications, right? But ethically, this practice presents some problems.
So instead of presenting the whole picture, they're kind of cherry-picking specific findings that might be more, I don't know, more appealing to journals. But is that really such a bad thing? I mean, it is based on their research, right?
Right, yeah, but the danger here is in the distortion of the bigger picture. It's kind of like, imagine a doctor is making a treatment decision based on a research paper that only focuses on the positive outcomes of a certain drug, but doesn't mention any potential side effects. That incomplete picture can have real-world consequences.
That's a great point. It's not just about academic honesty. It's about the impact that these decisions can have, you know, on decision-making in all sorts of fields.
Exactly. And this pressure to publish can really impact not just how researchers present their data, but also how they go about collaborating, which brings us to the next scenario, co-authorship.
This is something I think a lot of our listeners can relate to, right? Whether it's a school project or a work presentation, it's always a little tricky to figure out who gets the credit.
For sure. And in academic publishing, the stakes are much higher. Chen describes a case where two researchers, they come to what they call a reciprocal co-authorship arrangement. They basically just take turns being listed as the lead author, even if one person contributed a lot more to the project than the other.
So on the surface, it seems like a pretty friendly agreement. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But I guess the question is, where's that line between generosity and someone taking credit that they maybe haven't fully earned?
That's the million-dollar question. And unfortunately, there isn't an easy answer. Academia doesn't have a universal standard when it comes to co-authorship. There are some researchers who are incredibly generous, adding anyone who even just looked at the project as a co-author, and then there are others who are really strict about it, sometimes even excluding people who really deserve credit, all to boost their own publication record.
So how do you navigate those gray areas, especially if you're like a junior researcher or a grad student who might feel pressured to accept less credit?
Communication is key. If you're working on a project together, have a really open conversation early on about your expectations for authorship. Like, what actually is a significant contribution? Who's going to be responsible for what tasks? Just having that conversation up front can really prevent misunderstandings and resentment later on.
Yeah, it's about recognizing the value that everyone brings to the table, regardless of where they are in the academic hierarchy.
Precisely. Speaking of navigating complex systems, the next scenario dives into the world of peer review. Even the very process designed to ensure quality and impartiality can be vulnerable to manipulation.
Okay, now this is where things get interesting. I mean, peer review is like the gatekeeper of academic publishing, right? It's supposed to be this blind process where experts are evaluating the quality and originality of research without knowing who the author is. But Chen brings up a case where a researcher tries to, let's say, game the system a bit. Tell me more.
So picture this. A researcher is working on getting their research published. They really want to get into a top journal. So they think, you know what? I'm going to send this to a few colleagues to get some feedback before I even submit it, which is fine, right? They get some feedback. They incorporate some suggestions. But here's where it gets a little, I don't know.
Okay, I'm hooked. What'd they do?
When they finally do submit the paper for peer review, they make sure to mention some of those colleagues in the footnotes, specifically the ones who gave them the toughest critiques.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. So they're trying to influence who the journal might pick as a reviewer, hoping to avoid anyone who might give them a hard time.
Exactly. It's a bit of a gamble,
yeah.
Hoping to stack the deck in their favor. But this kind of behavior undermines the whole point of double-blind peer review.
It's like trying to pick the jury before your trial even starts, right? It just throws the whole idea of a fair and impartial evaluation out the window.
Right. And think about the message this sends to other researchers, right?
Yeah.
If this becomes the norm, it just creates this atmosphere of distrust within the community and raises doubts about the validity of all research.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that ethical breaches don't just affect the people directly involved. They can really impact the entire system.
Absolutely. And speaking of trust, the next scenario takes us deeper into some questionable publishing practices. We're talking about double submissions.
Double submissions. Wait, is that what I think it is? Submitting the same manuscript to two journals at the same time.
Yep, that's the one. So in this scenario, we have a researcher who submitted their work to a journal. They get a decision back that says revise and resubmit, which is pretty standard. But the editor adds a little note calling it a high-risk revision, meaning there's no guarantee of acceptance even if they make substantial changes.
So the author is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? They've already put so much time and energy into this paper.
Right. And instead of just deciding, you know, do I want to put in the extra work for this journal or should I try my luck somewhere else, they decide to hedge their bets. They submit the exact same manuscript to another journal, just hoping one of them will bite.
Whoa, that seems risky. What happens if they get caught?
Oh, it's not a matter of if, it's when, because these journals have ways of detecting duplicate submissions. So sure enough, one of the reviewers recognizes the paper from somewhere else and alerts both editors.
Busted. So what happens then?
Let's just say it doesn't end well. The author's actions are seen as a major breach of trust, and they risk really damaging their reputation, not just with those journals, but potentially within their entire field.
I guess this whole thing really highlights how crucial transparency and ethical decision-making are in this world of academic publishing. But before we move on, I do have a question about this whole idea of resubmitting a paper after it's been rejected. Is that ever okay?
It's a question a lot of researchers ask, and it's not as simple as a yes or no answer, right?
Yeah.
There are some nuances here. And Chen actually addresses this with another scenario. So picture this. A researcher has poured their heart and soul into this paper, and they send it off to their dream journal, you know, the one they've always wanted to be published in, and it gets rejected.
Oh, I can only imagine that sting of rejection, especially if it's a journal you've always had your eye on.
Right. But then they hear through the grapevine that this journal is going through some big changes. New editors, new editorial board, maybe even a little shift in focus. And they start to think, well, is this even the same journal anymore?
So they see an opportunity. But is it ethical to try and resubmit the paper under these circumstances?
That's where things get a little murky. So in this case, the researcher decides, why not? Let's go for it. They figure, with this new editorial team, it's practically a fresh start.
I have a feeling this isn't going to end well.
Of course not, right?
Right.
As luck would have it, one of the reviewers for this resubmission just happens to be the same editor who handled the paper the first time around.
Oh, no. Talk about awkward.
Yeah, and the reviewer is not happy. They accuse the author of trying to circumvent the system, things escalate, and ultimately the resubmission blows up in their face.
It seems like a classic case of what can go wrong when you try to cut corners.
For sure. The key takeaway here is transparency is key. If you're thinking about resubmitting a paper, make sure you understand the journal's specific policies. Some might explicitly forbid it, while others allow it under certain circumstances. Just check their guidelines, and if you're ever in doubt, it's always best to just reach out to the editor directly.
Yeah, honesty and clear communication can go a long way.
Exactly. And this focus on ethical conduct becomes even more important when you consider the power dynamics that exist within academia. Our next scenario actually deals with this directly, looking at the issue of plagiarism by grad students.
This is something I think hits close to home for a lot of people in academia. Plagiarism is obviously a serious no-no, but it can happen, sometimes unintentionally, especially for those who are just starting out in their research careers. So what happened? Did the grad student just misunderstand something? Or was it more intentional than that?
Well, in this case, a reviewer is going through the manuscript and notices some sections that seem really familiar, like they've read it before.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
Definitely a red flag. So this reviewer does a little digging and discovers that big chunks of this paper are literally copied word for word from another article that was published recently.
Wow, so they really just took it. What did the editor do?
The editor confronts the author, and get this, they don't even deny it.
No way.
Nope. Instead, they try to downplay it, claiming it was an accident. They say these overlapping sections are just, you know, standard wording for the literature review and the method sections. Everyone uses them.
Oh, so because the studies were on a similar topic, it's fine to just copy and paste whole sections. I don't think so.
Exactly. Not even remotely. And to make matters even worse, the author then tries to blame their grad student, saying they're new to academic publishing and didn't know any better.
Oh, come on. The classic blame it on the grad student routine. That's just slow, especially when it's your job to mentor them.
Totally. It's a terrible situation all around. And it really underscores just how important it is for experienced researchers to guide their students, especially when it comes to ethical conduct in research and publication.
Absolutely. This isn't just about avoiding getting caught for plagiarism. It's about establishing a culture of integrity and accountability within research teams from the ground up.
Exactly. And, you know, as we've been talking about these scenarios, what really stands out to me is that these ethical dilemmas often aren't clear-cut black and white situations.
It's easy to say, don't plagiarize, or don't try to game the peer review system. But these situations are complex, and that pressure to publish, to get your work out there, it can cloud your judgment sometimes.
Totally. And I think that's what makes Chen's article so helpful. It uses real-life examples to show us the pressures and temptations that people face in the academic world and forces us to confront them head-on.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that ethical research isn't just about following the rules. It's about making conscious choices, being aware of the potential impact of your actions, and always striving for honesty and integrity in everything you do.
Well said. And in the end, that's what benefits everyone, the researchers, the people reading the research, and the advancement of knowledge itself.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the often murky waters of academic publishing, what's the key message you want our listeners to take away?
I think the biggest thing is don't be afraid to ask questions. If you're not sure about something, whether it's how to determine authorship or what the plagiarism policy is or anything else related to ethics, reach out to a colleague, a mentor, or even the journal editor. There's no shame in asking for clarification.
Absolutely. It shows you're committed to getting it right.
Exactly. Yeah. And at the end of the day, just remember, your integrity as a researcher is worth more than any publication. Building a reputation for ethical conduct takes time, but it's a worthwhile investment.
Hear, hear. And on that note of academic integrity, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, stay curious.